comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people that make them and do not necessarily reflect the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or its affiliates or sponsors.
Hi, folks. Welcome to The Kevin Smith Show, whoever you are, wherever you happen to be, all around this beautiful planet we call Earth. Thanks for being here at The Kevin Smith Show. Talk radio like nowhere else on Earth, and it is the show where you matter. You know, each night I am privileged to sit at this microphone and speak to people all over the world, and I always remind you, because we have new listeners every night, if you are not yet subscribed to our free weekly newsletter, be sure you do. It's called The K-Files. And you subscribe by going to my website, kevinsmithshow.com. Click where it says K-Files. And in a matter of seconds, you can be subscribed. And you can unsubscribe anytime you want to. Tonight, for those who wish to do so, we're making it possible for you to watch our video feed for free. Normally, that's reserved for the members area for the princely sum of 23 cents a day, $6.95 a month. But tonight, you can watch for free. The link is on my website. So if you want to watch tonight, feel free to do so. It is free. And hopefully, you will like what you see, and hopefully you'll say, you know, I'd kind of like to watch this every night. And to do that, you have to join our members area. And like I said, it's the torturous sum of 23 cents. Take 23 cents to the store and see what you can get for it. Nothing. Except maybe some laughter. But with 23 cents a day, you can join our members area and you get to watch the show live. You get to watch the latest show. You get chat, forums, a library of free ebooks you can download, our archives, which are called K-Pods, and what else? Video Galaxy, and then monthly chat with me, as well as every once in a while, we get a guest that agrees to do a video chat with us, and plus we do some special broadcasts once in a while, and that all goes through the members area. So you get all of that for 23 cents. 23 cents. Now think about that. I know that's something that many of you will have to meditate over for many, many, many months. But having done so, make the decision. Tonight's a good night to join. But even if you don't join, you get to watch tonight for free. And I think you'll enjoy it. I hope you will enjoy it. The K-Files, back to the K-Files for just a moment. You know, the K-Files gives you the inside scoop on what's going on here at the show, as well as articles and links to videos that are interesting and important, and keeps you informed. Now, we never, ever, ever share those email addresses with anyone. Okay, so we don't rent those out. We don't rent our email list out. We don't loan it. We don't lease it out. We don't sell it. So you're not going to be spammed as a result of having subscribed to the K-Files. And you don't have to be a member of the Kevin Smith Show to subscribe to the K-Files. Okay, that's a free weekly newsletter. And we do not speak in Washington, D.C. speak. When we say free, we mean free. We'll be back with James Fox right after this.
Thank you.
at the top of the show, I mentioned that each night I'm privileged to sit at this microphone and speak to people around the world in over 140 countries. Now, that's truly a great privilege for which I am genuinely grateful. But with that privilege comes a great responsibility, a responsibility to make certain that we maintain both intellectual and journalistic integrity. Because of the type of information with which we deal, it sometimes is a bit like walking a high wire to maintain intellectual and journalistic integrity. Obviously, because there are so many beliefs that people have that enter into the discussion, and we try to keep it focused on not belief, but evidence and facts. Journalistic integrity requires that I not censor and not filter the information, but present you the information as is. Of course, we can then ask questions and use those questions and the answers to help us sift through the information to get to what we think is accurate. And that's the way that the news media, the news outlets, used to bring us information. But they have long ago abandoned that practice in favor of delivering us their own biases taped on or glued on to the information. And now they even allow their biases to determine what events they will tell us about. And it seems very often more important to tell us what some celebrity has done that has wound them up in jail rather than to tell us about the big events moving the world. Tonight we're going to be hearing from James Fox, filmmaker and investigative reporter. He's on location in South Louisiana investigating and reporting on the BP oil disaster. He has already reported some rather troubling information, and I have no reason to think that tonight will be less troubling. The purpose of this report and the purpose of this show, folks, is not to cause anyone to fear or to panic. The purpose is to inform. It's the unknown that almost always is more fearful than the known. It's better to know. In no way do I want the Kevin Smith Show to add to the stream of fear and speculative rage that's already out there. It's our purpose here tonight to get straight information from someone who is on the ground at the scene of this massive disaster. He'll be sharing some tough information, and I'm sure I'll be asking some tough questions. And I'm sure when we open the telephone lines, you'll be asking some tough questions, too. James Fox has been with us before, and it is my pleasure to welcome him back to the show. James, welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show.
Well, thank you for having me on, Kevin. I would like to just quickly say that to all your listeners out there, just to please excuse me, I've had about an hour's sleep and filming all day over the Ground Zero, and now I'm back here trying to digitize and get this footage up for all your viewers and everybody else out there. So excuse me if I'm a little slow.
That's all right. We understand. James, you've been down there now for how many days?
Just under a week.
Just under a week. And it's been action-packed, too, hasn't it?
It's been nonstop.
Yeah. Well, give us a thumbnail sketch of what it is that you've been doing.
Well, I like to see things firsthand, and I share those perspectives with my video camera and my video editing abilities. So I've been documenting what I've been experiencing. And I guess a thumbnail would be, it appears that BP is pretty much running the show as they want. There's a lot of secrecy going around the operation. I know that a lot of the, and this is from my personal experience. I'm not saying what I've kind of heard or from what I've, this is what, from what I've seen since I've been here. I don't think necessarily that the Obama administration is complicitous with this, but I have spoken to people where their BP has hired cleanup crews to pose or staged when the president comes, you know, kind of look busy in the background, put these hazmat suits on. And I actually spoke to one of the women that was whose best friend did that when President Obama was here a week ago. There's stage cleanup crews, and then I flew over the area just a couple days later, and I've documented that. I don't know if any of your viewers have seen it on YouTube yet or not, but I posted it about 24 hours ago. And there's just nobody on the beaches down over Grand Isle. I mean, just next to nobody, and the oil's just coming in. And it seems like BP is just kind of calling the shots. The EPA has been, as I'm sure most of your viewers already know, your listeners already know, they're using these dispersants against the will of the EPA. They're legal pretty much everywhere else, and they just keep on using them. And I know that the fishing industry, the estuaries, everybody's just up in arms about that. But they can't. They just keep on dumping millions of gallons of these dispersants.
And they're highly toxic. These dispersants, highly toxic. But let's focus on something that we've all heard about. We have all heard that there's a media blackout, and you're there, so I mean you're media, and you're getting interviews. So what's the deal with this story about media blackout?
Well, the first night I came into Grand Isle, I made it about 15 miles, just about 15 miles outside of Grand Isle, and it was just bustling with activity. I stopped at a little corner store market. It was, like I said, it was bustling with activity. Everybody had these badges on. I didn't know what those badges initially were, and I went into the store, and I'm just kind of, you know, my curious self, just kind of asking some questions, and people just were tight-lipped, looking at the ground when I tried to introduce myself, didn't want anything to do with me. I sat down at this counter, and I talked to this 15-year-old boy whose father's a fisherman, and he's lost his job, and so he's now working as part of the cleanup crew. And he basically said to me, you know, all the employees are working for BP. They're ordered not to talk to any reporters, period. Then I went over tried to talk to a few other people. They wouldn't talk to me, and I went to pay for what I purchased, and the store clerk said I could get arrested just for talking to reporters. Now, I'm telling you, this is what they told me. I'm not, you know, I'm trying to make it up. And it was just a real feeling of that there was a lot more going on below the surface than what we're being told. That was the feeling I had. The boy also told me that the BP was completely overwhelmed, that the media was getting, I'm just telling you what he told me. Once again, I have to clarify that according to his father, who was working part of the cleanup, we're only getting about 10% of just how bad it really is.
Well, you know, that's about what I always say. If you see it on, and I always mention a particular network that's not my favorite, and so I'll qualify this as saying this is my opinion, folks. My opinion is if you see it on CNN, divide it by 10, and you'll be down somewhere near a kernel of truth, maybe. That's my opinion, and it's only opinion. I know many of you love CNN, and if you do, you should continue to watch them. But these folks were not behaving like land of the free, home of the brave. Is that correct?
Yeah, and you know they actually even said. Well, the store clerk guy actually came out onto the patio and talked to me for a minute. I wish, like heck, I could have got him on. There's no way anyone was going to go on camera for me. I'll tell you that much. Certainly not that night. He said that they're arresting people with cameras. Now, I've heard this is true, and I've heard people have that experience, and other people who have not had that experience. So, I think for the most part, whatever BP's trying to handle is they're trying to put a lid on it as best they can, trying to contain this thing because word's getting out. It's as bad as you know. It's much worse than they're trying to let out, which has been pretty much the case since day one.
Well, as a matter of fact, today the U.S. government released figures for the amount that has been spilled and the continued flow, and it's double the estimate that they gave us, what was it, 5 days ago? It's double that amount. It's 2.1 billion gallons.
We have a very great opportunity right now to talk with Dr. Carl Safina with Blue Ocean Institute. We flew over ground zero today together in a seaplane. He has agreed to come on talk a little bit about what we saw today, just a couple of hours ago. And he's kind of difficult to pin down, but I told him about this radio show, and he's on standby as we speak.
Okay, is he there with you?
He is not there with me, but he's prepared to go on radio right now just for a few minutes and kind of give you the run-through. He's a marine biologist, an ecologist, and he saw what we all did today.
Okay, tell you what I'm going... Do you have a way to three-way him in, or do I need to do that?
Can you do that?
I can. Tell you what we'll do, though. We'll wait till the next break, and when the break comes up, then we'll do that. And his name is Dr. Carl Safina?
Yeah, with Blue Ocean Institute.
Okay.
Yeah, sorry.
All right, but see, that brings up another thing. We've heard about restricted airspace.
Yes.
And you know, there was the pilot you've got on YouTube there, the voice of the pilot, a pilot who flew out over the Gulf to make a turn and then come back in to land. And as soon as he landed, he was contacted by, according to him, Department of Homeland Security, and they wanted to know basically, you know, who are you and how far did you get out there?
And he was flying Shell executives in a huge jet, private jet.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, but, you know, that's because when I, the first night when I came out to Grand Isle, which is three or four nights ago, I noticed a couple of military trucks camouflaged. And I thought to myself, well, that's odd. Huh, what's the military doing here? Or, quite honestly, I think I might have even dismissed it prior to my experience with the when I stopped about 15 miles out, talked to some of the people at the store, that it was just maybe some personal trucks that people had painted camo. Then I started hearing about the military presence and the clamp down on the media, and but there must be some kind of connection between what the government's doing and what BP's doing. Maybe they're working together. I don't know yet, but then when I met this guy who talked about the Homeland Security all over him just for penetrating a little piece of airspace over that kind of, you know, ran true exactly what I observed. But the airspace is okay. So when we flew today, I had a pre-flight debriefing from the guy, the owner of the company that we flew with, and he had a map, which I'm actually videotaped, and showed there are certain flight zones that you couldn't go over at all, and then there are other zones where you had to maintain a 3,000 foot elevation. So primarily for the flight today, I believe we were around 2,500 to 3,000 feet, but there are certain areas that we couldn't fly over at all, and he kind of shows that on a map. So yeah, there are flight restrictions, but there's a lot of activity going on down there too. I mean, I saw countless helicopters down below us. So are they trying to cover up what's going on down there, or is it just such mayhem that they can't afford to risk, you know, a deluge of you know, reporters and airplanes, you know, colliding over the Gulf of Mexico? You know what I mean?
Well, but you know, if you say it's restricted below 3,000 feet, that doesn't keep it from having a deluge of reporters above 3,000 feet. So it doesn't make it safer.
Good point. Yeah.
From that respect, however, from 3,000 feet and below, I mean, maybe they are afraid this thing may blow again, and if you're below 3,000 feet and in the wrong spot, maybe that explosion could do something to you.
Well, you know, I wanted to mention quickly that my travel partner, Jet, actually did some research with West Jefferson Medical Center in Marrero, Louisiana.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and basically what they told us, that was between May 26th and May 30th, there have been 2 emergency admits, 6 ambulance, 3 helicopter, and 2 walk-ins. I'm so sorry, 11 emergency admits, 6 ambulance, 3 helicopter, 2 walk-ins. The symptoms were nausea, dizziness, severe headaches, respiratory distress. They were caused by chemical exposure to fumes from oil and dispersants. After that, after May 31st, they opened a first aid tent on Grand Isle, and also one at Lafitte. And over 70 people have been treated there in those two places. And they have begun pre-screening cleanup workers. That's what we were informed about a couple of hours ago.
Okay, now this brings us back to the press blackout, because they're talking to you. And if they're talking to you, and you've got a camera, and they're talking to you. I'm sorry.
Yeah. This was not on camera. We put in a call to.
Yeah, but you did a video where you did man on the street reports.
Well, that was in New Orleans. Yes.
Okay, so there you are with a camera, and people are talking to you, and the hospital's talking to you. Maybe the stories about the press blackout are not as real as some of those folks may think they are. I mean, maybe that was an exaggeration on their part.
Or there are certain hot spots, for instance, activities hotter than others. You know, for instance, the night I went into Grand Isle, believe me, the friend that was traveling with me that night said she'd never go back. So... what I experienced that night, I might experience something different the next night. I'm actually going to go back in the next few days, and I'll be glad to report to you what I uncover. But, I mean, how are they going to black out the entire, state of Louisiana, but the coastlines, I mean, New Orleans, I mean, you know, maybe there's just certain areas that they're trying to do their best to keep from getting out. I don't know.
And while we're talking about the blackout, and we keep saying maybe they do this or maybe they did this, the people that told you that they would be arrested, did they tell you who told them that?
It's a very good question. No, there was some ambiguity there. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Do you remember? Sorry. Let me ask my partners traveling with me. Do you remember who they said were arresting people that night in Grand Isle? Was it the local police, or was it? Do you remember?
No,
I got the impression. I don't know. I got the impression that it's subcontractors from BP, but I just don't know. Subcontractors from BP, but I just don't know.
Well, subcontractors may can say they're going to arrest you, but they cannot arrest you. All right, we're going to take a break. During this break, we're going to try and get Dr. Carl Safina on the line, and we'll be back right after this. Welcome back to the show. During the break, I was able to get Dr. Carl Safina online with us, but let me check and make sure. I did this in a way that we don't normally do it, so let's see if it worked. Dr. Safina, are you with me? Okay. Dr. Safina, are you with me?
I am.
Okay. And James Fox, are you with me?
Yes, I am.
All right. If you will, introduce Dr. Safina to the audience.
Dr. Carl Safina with Blue Ocean Institute, founder of Blue Ocean Institute, actually organized this flight, which I documented on camera today. Dr. Safina, can you tell us what we saw?
Yeah. We went out to the site of the blowout in the Gulf of Mexico, and... then we flew along the marsh coast as far as about Grand Isle, Louisiana, and then we came back, and that took several hours. What you see as you leave the coast, you see a lot of muddy water from the Mississippi mingling with the Gulf of Mexico, and there are a few slicks here and there along the coastline once you get out over the salt water and away from the Mississippi Delta. The position of them seems to change a lot. How heavy they are with oil seems to change a lot. And then as we got a number of miles offshore, the blowout site is about 50 miles offshore roughly, the oil got heavier and more consistent. And by the time we were nearing the site of the blowout, there was oil on the surface, really as far as you could see in any direction for quite a few miles. In some places it was very, very heavy and thick and dark. In other places it looked kind of like, I don't know, a light brown, a sheen, a little bit like used motor oil might look if you imagine spilling that on the surface of the ocean. But it covered the sea unrelentingly for many miles in every direction. Then we got right over the site of the blowout, and there are quite a few ships, I would say several dozen ships, quite a lot of helicopter activity, these rigs that are drilling the relief wells, the rig that I guess is capturing the oil and gas because one of them was flaring off quite a lot of gas. And it looked apocalyptic. I mean, it looked the way the surface of the ocean is never supposed to look. Then we came back along the Grand Isle shore, and the oil along that stretch of shoreline, which runs quite a few miles also, I mean, maybe 15 miles or so, those beaches are really pretty dark. It's pretty dirty. I think they had it much heavier a few days ago, and you could see the oil on the beach, concentrated up in a line where the waves had left it, and plenty more was on its way and coming ashore. The slick was extending from the shoreline seaward. So, very, very unpleasant and really rather disturbing. It's not the way the world is supposed to look.
How many people did you see in cleanup crews out there?
I don't think we saw any cleanup crews from the air, but I drove to Grand Isle later. In fact, I'm still on my way driving back from to New Orleans from there. And there are cleanup crews all along that entire beach. And they were being bussed in. There were lots of school buses with them that were leaving as I was arriving. So I think there were probably hundreds of workers on the beach there. I'm not sure what they were doing because there was plenty of oil on the beach after everybody was on their way out. We didn't really see that from the air, from our vantage point. But they're down there, and I think the task is too big for that kind of an effort. I really don't think they can keep up with it.
Well, what folks that are watching on our TV channel are seeing the what I believe to be the most recent video of the oil spewing from the bottom of the Gulf. And what, as you were talking about the cleanup, what struck my mind is, man, this stuff is coming out. This is even after they've put the cap on this thing and they're capturing some of the oil. This is spewing oil out of there so fast, no cleanup crew could possibly keep up with this.
Yeah, the other thing is that the oil that they're capturing, which they're saying is a certain percentage of it, I haven't heard them say a number, but they're capturing some of it, they're saying, and what they're getting is a lot more than we've been told for over 50 days is coming out of there. Now, you can see that there's an awful lot that they're not getting, and obviously we haven't been given the straight story, and they seem to have been trying to hide how much. I think that's one of the strategies behind using these dispersants to try to prevent the oil from being seen at the surface, because the oil is still toxic. It doesn't make the oil go away. It just dissolves it into the water where it really cannot be recovered at all, but it can't be seen. And I think that's got to be part of the strategy, because part of their liability is based on how much oil.
You're a marine biologist. What is this doing? What is the? I know what the potential is, but what is it doing right now to the marine life in that part of the Gulf?
Well, you you know, the most comprehensive answer to that question is it's not good. Nobody really knows what it's doing because nobody knows how much oil or the extent of it. We do know that the dispersant is toxic. We do know that the dispersant makes the oil more toxic in at least the short term, and that the mix of dispersant and oil kills larval fish, kills fish eggs, and kills plankton. We also know that certain numbers of turtles, dolphins, pelicans, and other birds are dying. Probably about 100 are dying for every one that is found and recovered in any way. The other effects are economic and sociological and maybe longer lasting. There are thousands of people whose business just ended because the fishing is closed in a very, very vast area of the Gulf. It's probably killing or ruining shellfish beds. And everything else that goes along with this is going down that black drain. All the restaurants that cater to tourists, because tourists are not coming. I spoke to a realtor yesterday who told me that 75% of her summer bookings had canceled, and she was all the way over at the Alabama-Florida line, not even here where it's much heavier. I spoke to a boat captain who said that most of his summer clients have already canceled. They want their money back. I spoke to another guy who said that the what they call the fishing camps, which are just lots of beach houses and getaways, people are already canceling construction that had been started. So the effects are broad and really deep, and what it's doing to people's minds, people who don't know if they'll ever go back to work, or if they'll be back at work next year, or if they'll have to move, the stress on families, the strain of not knowing, you know, it's all really terrible, and I think incalculable at this point.
It also is not, I mean, it's very easy to see that if this kills off a lot of marine life, and I don't see how it could not do so, this is going to severely damage the food supply and the food prices in the United States, and we could have, because of this, a runaway escalation in food prices, and an increased number of people going hungry.
Well, I think also there are probably a lot of people in other parts of the world who are, I mean, they may or may not be sympathetic, but I'm sure that there's part of this that is making them kind of happy, because a big part of the U.S. seafood market is likely to go over toward them as far as market share is concerned and as far as prices are concerned.
Mm-hmm.
So there will be, you know, there'll be people, distant people, benefiting from the tragedy here, and through no fault of their own, but they certainly will take advantage of it, and I guess in a sense they're entitled to do so. It may put more pressure on marine resources in some other places as well. So the ripple effects are quite large. It's not just a Gulf of Mexico or Gulf Coast issue. It affects a lot of different things in various ways.
When you flew over this today, was this your first time to fly over it?
No, I was here about a month ago, and we flew over it then. The oil is over a much, it's more comprehensively over a wider area. In other words, back then there were tongues of it, there were big streaks of it, there were large areas of it. But today, when you got anywhere near it, and anywhere near, I mean, like, you know, 20 miles at least, it seemed like there was oil continuously over the entire sea surface in some amount, and then in some other places it was much heavier.
If you had to put it into one word, your impression of it when you saw it today, if you put it into one word, what would that one word be?
Apocalyptic.
Is there, in your opinion, any hope of actually cleaning this up?
No, not really. The hope is that the rejuvenating power of nature will act faster here than it has in other places because of the heat and because of the marshes themselves, which will bear a big part of the brunt of this, but may also be able, in a sense, to absorb and buffer a lot of it. Because the marshes are really very vast. But all of this is sort of guessing. I don't think people will be able to really clean it. I think a lot of it will be in the sand for years. It may taint some of the seafood, like oysters and things like that, for years. And I hope it doesn't. I hope that the speculation and the experience from other places somehow, miraculously, I guess, does not prove to be the case here. But as far as people cleaning it up, I doubt it. And much of it has been hit with these toxic dispersants, and there's no intention and no possibility of cleaning it up. It's like taking an egg and baking a cake with it. You cannot get that egg out of the cake once you do that, and that's what the dispersants have done as far as distributing the oil, or quite a lot of the oil, into the waters of the Gulf. There's no way to retrieve those, and nor is that any part of the strategy. But even the oil that's drifting around and that's washing up, I think a very small fraction of that is likely to be recovered in any way, and the rest of it, I think, will be there for a long while, and I hope in some way it isn't. I hope in some way it either gets buried in the sand or a lot of it evaporates or something. But we're sort of reduced to wishing here.
All right, Dr. Carl Safina, I want to thank you for being with us. It's been a pleasure. Do you have a web address or something that you would like to tell folks about?
Yeah, absolutely. There are two websites. One is my organization, Blue Ocean Institute, which is at Stony Brook University, and that's blueocean.org, and the other is carlsafina.org. That's carlsafina.org. And I really appreciate you having me on.
Well, I appreciate you giving us of your time as you're traveling back now to New Orleans, and we wish you a safe trip. We have to step away for a break, ladies and gentlemen, and we will be back right after this. Welcome back. My guest this evening is James Fox. You know him for his masterpieces in the field of UFOs. He's a filmmaker. He's also an investigative reporter, in this case especially. And we're talking about what he has seen and experienced. He's on the ground at the Gulf. And what he's seen and experienced of the BP oil disaster. James, I want to thank you for getting us connected with Dr. Carl Safina. That was absolutely eye-opening when he said it was apocalyptic.
Someone who's going to sensationalize something. He's a very calm, educated, thoughtful person, and for him, you know, the look on his face, we couldn't communicate in the airplane at all. I mean, you could scream as loud as you could, you know, 1 inch away, there was no conversation.
Mm-hmm.
So it was all pretty much writing and facial expressions. I was operating the camera probably 85% of the time, and I had a window open, a very large window open, almost, I'd say roughly about half the size of a windscreen on your average size car. So there was 120 mile an hour winds rushing in to the cabin in very, very tight quarters. But periodically I'd pull the camera around and I'd film him, Dr. Safina, observing what he's looking at, or reacting to what he's looking at. And when we got over ground zero, the look on his face spoke volumes. And later I asked him, you know, what he thought of it, and the word apocalyptic is what came out of his mouth, and that's exactly kind of what I was thinking when I was observing it. I just couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe it. And there was like a toxic dispersant oil soup all around the ships, the activity. There was a flurry of activity, helicopters and small boats, big boats, huge boats with flames flying up in the air, like huge flames coming up. We circled around it for a number of times. What seemed like eternity, actually. And it was really sobering. Really sobering.
All right, now,
it doesn't look like a situation that's under control. Let's put it that way.
Well, let's talk about control. The EPA, according to news reports, have told BP to stop using the dispersants. BP, from what I understand, are continuing to use them. Who's in charge?
Well, there's a guy apparently with the Coast Guard. I guess his name is Thad Allen. He's the commandant.
Mm-hmm.
Commandant, sorry. He apparently has, I guess his statement, trying to get his exact statement here to the public, but it totally conflicts with the statement that any biologist, ecologist, doctor that I've talked to, they're illegal pretty much everywhere else in the world. Apparently the EPA has told BP to stop using these dispersants, and there's been some debate going on back and forth. Pretty much everyone I've talked to has the effects of the oil, the amount of the oil, what's going to happen. But everybody across the board in Louisiana that I've talked to is totally against the use of these dispersants. And what we saw today, I filmed these today in high definition from the air, these massive, you know, they keep denying these plumes, these underwater plumes,
mm-hmm,
of oil.
Yeah.
I saw them and I filmed them today.
Do you have, because of the stories about people with cameras getting arrested and so forth, do you have any concern that you're going to be accosted and arrested?
Well, you know, I the first night when I experienced at Grand Isle, I was very, very concerned. I haven't gone back there yet since. Maybe I got on a particularly, like, a bad night, I don't know, or maybe there was a particular clampdown or some sort of activity that time that I happened to stumble across.
Mm-hmm.
No, I'm not too worried about it at this point. Other people seem to be more concerned than I am, but I'm not maybe I should be more worried than I am, but I guess after investigating UFOs, you know, this is kind of like, you know, couple notches down. I don't know.
All right. Well, let me ask you this. Why do you think it is that the major news media are not out there doing what you're doing?
Okay. Well, that's a very good point, you know, and I don't want to say there's a big conspiracy. I don't want to say that just yet, but there's certainly, let's put it this way. I spoke the other night I've been talking regularly with CNN. Checking in with them, they check in with me, because I've been on Larry King a number of times, I'm in touch with their producers, and I get information from them, they get information from me. I said, apparently, that photo op with President Obama was staged by BP exec. They put these people in hazmat suits behind Obama cleaning up the beaches, and the very next day there was no one on the beaches. Well, I talked to one of the women whose best friend actually was there and did it. It was totally staged, according to her.
Mm-hmm.
I have the number, by the way, and I'm going to try to get a statement from the woman who did that. Well, I informed, I immediately, and then the whole black out with the media in that area, and what residents were telling me and workers were telling me and not telling me, and I brought this to the attention of CNN, and she said, we're getting some similar reports coming in. We're also getting reports coming in that indeed was a staged photo op with the president in the backdrop. Whether the president was in on it or not, I don't know, but BP certainly staged that. So there is some kind of effort to suppress the reality of it, and when I saw what I saw today, I was not prepared for that. I just wasn't prepared for that. Maybe they're saying, look, I think that if BP came out with what's really going on, I mean, when I looked down and I saw Ground Zero, that was just, to me, it looked like massive chaos. It looked like a situation that they did not have a handle on. And I can't imagine why they would want to come forward and share that information with the rest of the world. You know what I mean? So,
well, especially since their stock has already lost half its value.
Yeah, and it seemed, another thing is that according to the residents and the fishing people that I've talked to, the locals, BP had a right to drill in the Gulf, but not take over the cleanup. That's where the government should step in and take over. And I think I couldn't agree more with that. BP is being very secretive. They have been secretive. They have a terrible track record for being secretive. Why are we putting? They've been lying since day one. I don't understand why we're allowing them to be in charge of the cleanup, and why the EPA is telling them not to use the dispersants, and yet they're still using the dispersants. What would happen if the EPA told me not to dump toxic chemicals known to be harmful into an estuary or waters near an estuary? They told me not to do it, and I continued doing it. What would they do to me?
Good point. All right, we're going to step away for break. When we come back from this break, we'll open up the telephone lines and invite our audience to join us with your questions and comments for James Fox. We'll be back. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show, and for those of you joining us just now in this second hour, welcome aboard. We're glad you're here. My most sincere sympathy to you for whatever it is that kept you from the first hour, but we are glad you're here now. My guest is James Fox, filmmaker, investigative reporter, and he's talking with us about what he has seen and experienced, what he is seeing and experiencing daily as he is on location in South Louisiana and dealing with the BP Gulf. They're calling it an oil spill. It's not. It's way beyond that. It's an oil disaster. James, one question before I open up the telephone lines for the audience. In this restricted airspace, you told us about how you were given a briefing before you went up in the air.
Pre-flight. I did an on-camera pre-flight, and the map that was used, that he used, had areas circled that we had to avoid altogether, couldn't fly over at all.
That's what I want to ask you about. Why? What's in the no-fly zones?
That was the map he had, and you just couldn't fly over it. I was just filming him giving me the debriefing, so I didn't question as to why we couldn't fly over there. He said there's these areas we can't fly over at all, and he did, and they were circled. You'll see it on the YouTube. When I post this link up to your site, either late tonight or first thing in the morning, you'll see it. It'll be the first thing, and you'll see these purple circles on the map that you just had to avoid altogether, and I don't know.
But here's the deal. If you can fly over Ground Zero, if you can fly over where this disaster actually took place and where it's where the crude oil is gushing up from the ocean floor. You can fly over that and you can videotape that, but there are places where you're not allowed to fly at all. You know, that kind of indicates there's something out there that's far worse than that.
And I tell you, you know, I have to be honest with you, this, I don't want this to come out the wrong way, but if that was my accident, I probably wouldn't want anybody looking at that ground zero. It was that bad, Kevin. I've never seen anything like it. I wish I could articulate what I saw better. But I think Dr. Safina put it pretty succinctly when he said apocalyptic. Just flames. You imagine flames coming out of these ships? Like huge flames. And just oil.
But as bad as that is, it's not a no-fly zone. And the no-fly zones have to have something worse in them.
Yeah, apparently there's, and there's, you know what? Let me read to you, I took some notes here, of a map of where we flew over and some of the areas that we were not allowed to fly over. So it looks, we took off from Bellechasse, the suburb of New Orleans. We headed southeast near Birdfoot across the coastline, the estuary Barataria Bay, and Oak River Marsh. And some of those surrounding areas are completely off limits.
There's got to be something that is just massively devastating, or...
Why won't they let us film any kind of birds? You know that they won't let you film any kind of birds covered in oil? They're doing their best. And yet, here's another thing. Apparently a BP exec has to be on the boat where they're collecting birds, and then they won't let people film these. I mean, are they trying to prevent these images from getting out because of the devastation?
That's curious, because we know that there are birds that are covered with oil. It happens at every oil disaster. That's curious. One of the species that was just taken off of the endangered species list was the brown pelican.
Oh, God, I love pelicans. I grew up with pelicans.
Well, this could very well put them back on it or do them in altogether. And, you know, I have said on this show, and this isn't to incite any kind of panic in anybody. It's just an observation that if they don't get this thing capped, and at the beginning I was saying if they don't get it capped soon, it's too late for soon. Too late for soon. But if they don't get this capped really quick now, this is potentially an extinction-level event. Because of the ripple effect through the food chain.
You know, I'm going to meet tomorrow with a company, but it's called Bioremediation, and I'm sure you probably know more about it than I do. But I posed that question to Dr. Carl Safina, who's, you know, as you know, a marine biologist, ecologist. And I said, well, first of all, I can't imagine how anyone's going to go into these estuaries and scoop the oil out. You're probably going to do more damage going in there than you would, do you know what I mean, than just leaving it be.
Mm-hmm.
So I asked him the question. I said, what about these hydrocarbon-eating microbes? You know, they're naturally occurring in the ocean floor and stuff. And he said, well, you know, he said, that's quite possibly if we could find a particular microbe, he could see that as a definitely a viable option. I'm going to meet with some people tomorrow and try an experiment on camera tomorrow or Saturday. Excuse me, and try to have a scientist present and take some samples of the oil from the beaches and see what the effect is from these hydrocarbon eating microbes. Because I just don't know. There's no way you're going to scoop all this oil off the beach. That's just not going to happen. What's happening right now is it's just to make people feel like they're doing something. There's no way they're going to scoop that oil off the beaches.
It's that bad, huh?
Oh. No way. You could imagine flying in an airplane. We must have been doing 100 knots for a couple of hours. And it was like, for the most part, it was just oil below you. and it was either big plumes of it that were below the surface. Wish I could describe to you better what they look like. Fingers, like orangey-blue fingers of globules, strings under the surface of the ocean. Some of them look rusty, rust color. Some of them have them were like purpley black, but they were these long fingers, and they were like bulbous almost. And yeah, it was just, and it just went on for so long, Kevin, in every single direction. It's so much oil. How are you going to scoop that up off the beaches?
Well, you know, here's what I don't understand. Look, this happened out in federally governed waters. Okay, it didn't happen in state waters. It happened in federally governed waters. Why has the federal government no power to make BP do certain things? Like, do not use the dispersant. And if they continue to use it, you send the Marines in, you arrest the people that are doing the dispersant, and you take over the operation and take over command of the operation. And at least for right now, you put BP under your command, and you say you do it, or you go to jail.
And the EP, exactly. And I don't understand how they're getting away with it. I just don't. It really, I guess it goes back to the golden rule, those with the gold rule. I mean, we're talking probably, you know, what is BP? Probably one of the most powerful companies in the world, right?
Was before this.
Right. Right.
Yeah. After this, maybe not.
You imagine the lobbying power they have on the Hill?
Well, again, after this, maybe not too much.
Well,
maybe not.
You know, the million-dollar question, why is it that the EPA could tell these guys not to use dispersants, and yet they go on using the dispersants? And like I said earlier, every single person I've talked to, there's been debates going on as to the effects of the oil, the amount of the oil, that sort of thing. But when it comes to dispersants, everybody I've spoken to across the board doesn't want them.
Let's open up the telephone lines and invite our audience to join us in this discussion. Ladies and gentlemen, our telephone number, the main number here in the studio, and this is works worldwide, is 623-444-5889. If you live in the USA or Canada, our toll-free number is 888-223-4599. Now, if you're outside of the USA and you're outside of Canada, you can call that main number. But I don't have a toll-free number for outside of the USA and Canada, so I have what we call flash messages for you. And you can go to my website, click where it says flash message, and you can send me your question or comment that way. And we will read it on the air and respond to it. 623-444-5889 is the main number. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
My name is Carrie, and I'm calling from Mesa, Arizona.
Hello, Carrie.
Hi, Carrie.
Hey. Listen, I wanted to call because I know earlier James and Dr. Safina had said something about reporting the birds and other wildlife that has been affected by the BP oil spill or disaster. And for those people that have Facebook accounts, I urge you to add Everyday Wildlife Champions to your, you know, page. They have been sending little brief synopsis, I guess, of rescue efforts on that are occurring in that area, and it's just a wonderful effort on their part, and they have been providing statements from the International Bird Rescue, the IBRCC. So if people want to get in touch with them to see what they are doing on their end, or even provide volunteer work or whatever. Again, it's Everyday Wildlife Champions. for Facebook.
Okay. Thank you, Carrie. All right, 623-444-5889. And the toll-free number, 888-223-4599. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, this is Rex from Miami.
Hello, Rex.
Hi, Rex.
Hey. Hi. James, I wanted to ask you about those underwater plumes that you could see.
Yes.
How far away were those from Ground Zero? Do you think that's the you're seeing the original one, or do you think that we've got multiple fissures underwater?
Well, I mean, I was on the lookout for them the entire time because that was, for me, I kept hearing BP denying their existence, so I was determined to find them and document them from the air. So I'm kind of monitoring. I guess we were probably 25, 30 miles out to sea between shore and the Ground Zero, and I started noticing them then. And there are these, and then after that, I saw a lot of them. I couldn't count how many I saw, but I saw a lot of them. They were pretty much dispersed all throughout the ocean. And after we flew over Ground Zero, they continued all the way along. I mean, God, I mean, probably 30 to 40 to 50 mile radius all the way around, at least.
Wow.
And
you think those were?
I'm sorry?
Oh, do you think those were coming all the way from the seabed, or could you tell?
Gosh, you know, well, it's funny because at first I remember thinking from the air, we had some cloud layers, and they would reflect a shadow, or they would cast a shadow on the surface of the water. And I thought, well, gosh, is it going to be difficult for me to determine, you know, that from these plumes? Well, when I saw the first plume, it was like, okay, there's no question. I can't say definitively on how deep they were below the surface, but let me tell you, man, there's no doubt in your mind when you see these things what they are. How deep they are or how fast they're traveling, I guess it would depend on, you know, underwater currents. Maybe some of them have gotten in some of the underwater currents and already, God knows where they are. And I think that, you know, Dr. Safina brought up a really interesting point. It's like, the only real reason for BP to use the dispersants is to hide how much oil is coming out of that hole, the pipe. I mean, yeah.
Yeah, because all it does is, it doesn't make it go away, it just makes part of it invisible.
Exactly. You know, and you can deal with it. I mean, what Dr. Safina was telling me today, he said, look, why didn't they just, you know, section off the area at the surface of this leak, or well, you know, put these things to contain it, I guess, with a certain mile radius, and then just suction it out as it's coming out of the ground.
Mm-hmm.
Why would you subject it to all these dispersants right there on the spot? Then we don't even know where the oil's going. It's just crazy to me. But I saw it firsthand today. When BP says those things aren't there, they are fully there. And I've got video footage of them, and I will share that video footage within 12 hours. Kevin, I'll link it to your website.
Okay, very good. Rex, thanks for the call. 623-444-5889 or toll-free 888-223-4599. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, Kevin. It's Mark from Ohio. I had one question for James real quick.
All right, Mark.
Hi, Kevin.
Mark, this oil spill is so depressing, I can't even hardly watch any news about it at all. And you guys may have mentioned this earlier in the show, so forgive me if you have. James, I was wondering if you had heard about the seventh Hopi prophecy that talks about the sea turning black and many living things dying because of it.
Oh, God. No, I mean, no. I just, no.
You should look that up. Quite interesting.
Is this self-fulfilling prophecy, or is this a real accident here?
Well,
you know, it really is a Hopi prophecy.
Yes, it is.
Mm-hmm.
It says that the fourth world shall end soon, and the fifth world shall begin, and this is the seventh sign. You will hear the sea turning black and many living things dying because of it.
It was. You heard what Dr. Safina said. Apocalyptic. It was just, like I said to your viewers out there, I'm gonna post this. I'm gonna transfer the footage, edit it, compress it, and I'll post it up on YouTube and send you a link, Kevin, because it's just jaw dropping.
All right, Mark. Thanks for the call. 623-444-5889 or 888-223-4599. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Kevin, this is Brent from Wyoming.
Hello, Brent.
You mentioned it a couple questions ago, but I'm wondering, on the no-fly zones, what are the underwater currents like? Would the underwater currents lead to those areas being looking and appearing and being worse than at ground zero?
That's a really good question. Let me look into that. And that's basically in the no-fly zones, what are the underwater currents like?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I'm going to look into that. And also, if... well, people can respond to the YouTube or send me an email with anything they'd like me to look into at James C. Fox, James C. as in Charles, Fox, at gmail.com.
All right.
No fly zones. What are the underwater currents like?
Good question, Brent.
Goodbye.
I wish you could have asked that to the biologist.
Well, you know, I always say, and I'm not kidding when I say this, when I open up the telephone lines and the audience begins to call in, it's really, very often, it's like getting to go back to university because a whole bunch of things come up that I just didn't think of, you know, and no one mind can think of everything, and we have some very sharp folks out there. All right, caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, this is Steve from New Orleans.
Hello, Steve.
Hi, Steve.
How you doing? How y'all doing tonight?
Good.
Great. You know, obviously this is beyond words as far as the level of anxiety people are feeling in this area. And I don't necessarily know if it's even to a point now where anything can be done. But one of the suggested solutions had to do with tankers that were used in a similar situation, I don't know, maybe 10 years ago in Saudi Arabia,
mm-hmm.
Area there, where they have tankers literally that can suck the water up from underneath and divide the actual oil and water on board and then end up dispersing, you know, relatively clean water back into the ocean. And I've heard that was offered weeks and weeks ago, and no one seemed to have even discussed that.
That's a really good point. You know, I mean, I don't know if any of you out there have seen some of the footage on CNN where you see a couple of guys with vacuum cleaners, I mean, literally looking like vacuum cleaners. And once you fly over the area like I have, you literally look at those vacuum cleaners and you're just going, this is so futile. Why are you even showing us this nonsense? There's
it's
no
ridiculous.
Way. I can't imagine why all hands are not on deck right now. Why the government hasn't stepped in. What are they waiting for? The stuff is starting to go into the estuaries. I've seen this with my own eyes. They're putting out some of those little barriers. What are those little, what are they called? Those little boobs? Booms. So sorry.
The boobs are the guys doing it, saying that that'll work.
But it's you know, from the air, the level of support and cleaning crew is so minimal. It's almost a joke. Matter of fact, it is a joke.
Wow.
I don't understand. What are they waiting for?
Well, like you said, they're boobs. All right, Steve, does that handle it for you, or you have another question?
No, that's basically it. I just was trying to throw that out there, see if anybody had a comment.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, I read an email written by a guy that I think he was in charge of that operation you're talking about, that he has made many efforts to get in touch with the CEO of BP, and he just keeps getting rebuffed and ignored.
It doesn't make any sense at all, because it's an absolute answer. I mean, it's not maybe 100% perfect, but it's...
It would get some of it.
A lot of potential. It's positive. On top of the fact that the oil they recoup possibly could have some financial benefits, there's a win-win there regardless.
And
it makes no sense at all to not at least deploy that effort to even try and see the results. It's beyond common sense.
Yeah.
Well, I was expecting from the air to see ground crews everywhere. You know, ships just wall to wall. It was so sparse. The most activity I saw was at Ground Zero. Other than that, it's so sparse, you guys. You'll see when I show this video. And Kevin, you've seen the first video I put up from Grand Isle yesterday. I mean, you see like whole beaches, just barren beaches with black oil
seeping
up onto it.
Yeah.
There's no one there.
Wow. All right, Steve, thank you for the call. And we are just seconds away from break. When we come back, we'll take more calls. And if you, well, let me just see right here. Caller, are you willing to hang on through the break?
Yes.
All right. Be sure you have your radio turned down so that we don't hear me in the background. And when we come back from this break, we will continue with James Fox and your calls. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. We're talking this evening with James Fox, and we're talking about his personal observations, what he has seen, what he has experienced, what people have told him of this disaster, this BP disaster in the Gulf of Mexico. James, we have a caller on hold, so let's go to the telephone. Caller, if you will, tell us your first name and from where are you calling?
My first name is Angela, and I'm calling from Stephenville, Texas.
Hello, Angela. Would this be Angela Joyner?
Yes.
Well, here is another crack journalist, folks.
Hey, Angela.
Hey, James.
I'm so glad you joined us.
The reason I'm calling is because I have doing a lot of reading on this, and I was just now Googling to see if I could find this article again. I haven't been able to put my hands on it yet, but one reason, and it makes sense to me, why the government is not interfering with British Petroleum is because they don't want to take on the liability. Say, for instance, if someone, which there's going to be a lot of someone, so she's already filing claims to get it for
Angela?
Petroleum.
Yeah. Angela, are you walking around or anything? Your cell phone is really patchy.
Oh, no, I'm not walking around. Can you hear me now?
That's better.
Yeah.
Okay. That if someone, which there's going to be a lot of someone, you know, filing claims against British Petroleum, right?
Mm-hmm.
That if the government interferes in their cleanup method or the way that they decide to handle it, then the way the laws are written, and which you know that Obama has lifted the cap on the amount to $1.6 billion from $100 million, that in essentially what that means is the government takes on the liability, and that's why the government's hands are tied about how they cleaned it up. Does that make sense?
You know, in a perverse way, it does. But the deal is this. The government is going to be held responsible maybe not financially, but at the ballot box for how this is handled. And right now, there aren't any people anywhere on planet Earth that are happy with how this is being handled. Mother Nature's not very happy, and when Mother Nature ain't happy, ain't nobody happy.
Angela,
exactly.
When I looked at this from the air 2 days in a row, all I could think is, where the heck is everybody?
Uh-huh.
Why aren't all hands on deck? Why aren't we doing everything we possibly can to prevent... Think of the devastation this is going to have in the estuaries and marshes and fisheries. I mean, these locals are telling me it's like it's entering into the marshes right now.
Yes, I understand that.
Almost nobody down there stopping it.
And that's what I thought, you know, when I looked at your video last night, James. One lonely little skimmer boat. And what the heck is that no-fly zone about? Because I didn't even know. You guys didn't even see any other planes, or I didn't see any from your viewpoint that you gave us.
You know what? That's funny, because you'd think, you know, after President Obama's been in Grand Isle at least once, that there would be a flurry of activity on the beach and stuff. Now, I know that Dr.
Safina?
Safina, excuse me, my God. I've had 1 hour of sleep in the last 2 days. said that he saw some activity on the beaches there, but I flew over those big barren beaches and documented it just yesterday. I didn't see anybody
right.
on the beaches.
Well, you know, it's
like,
unfortunate, but you know how things always come down to money. It always comes down to money. Now, if the United States government says, okay, BP, you have to do it this way, you have to do it that way, then when those claims come in, they're going to say, well, we weren't allowed to do what we wanted to do and how we wanted to proceed, so you can't sue us, sue the government.
Everyone should argue about the money afterwards. They need to clean that oil up right now.
Well, let me argue about the money right now. Since BP's value has dropped to half what it was, there is every reason to think it will continue to drop as this disaster continues. And that means they will have less resources, perhaps, to pay these claims. So since you're not going to get them to pay the claims anyway, it's time to step in and say, okay, now the big boys are going to take over, and you are going to do what we tell you to do.
James, were you able to go out on the beach itself? I mean...
I'm going to try and go. Angela, I'm so sorry. I've been so busy that I haven't had any spare time to do that. I want to go out. I'm going to try tomorrow.
Yeah,
I'm
I know.
Editing all night tonight. I'm going to try and go out tomorrow and get some sampled oil so we could try this bioremediation technique.
Well, you know, what I was wondering, is it true that BP is controlling access to the beach? Because I don't see how they can do that. I don't know if it was true.
I've heard yes, and I've heard no.
I guess you'll find out tomorrow.
Yeah,
okay, I'll get off here so you can get another caller.
Angela, thanks for calling in.
Thanks, Angela.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Oh, man. Well, you'll find out tomorrow when you try to go to the beach. You'll find out whether they control the access or not.
Yeah, like I think, I mean, the impression I get is that... They're trying their darndest to control it as best they can.
Mm-hmm.
Minimize the exposure to just how bad it is.
Mm. All right, let's go back to the telephone. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, Kevin. It's Rick from Kentucky.
Well, hello, Rick. How are you doing?
Doing good. Doing good. Hello,
good.
James.
Good evening, Rick. Thanks for calling in.
Thank you. Thank you for getting us the real story about what's going on down there. I just wanted to make a short comment. I've been a private pilot for 30 years, and as far as I know, there's nobody other than the FAA that can create a no-fly zone. They're issued in what's called a notice to airmen, and the only people I have ever seen and know that can do it are FAA. So that means, I don't know what reason the federal government would have for not wanting you to fly over it and film it. I would guess that it's probably at the request of BP, has requested the government make it a no-fly zone, and they've done so.
Well, what I do know is that the I talked to a pilot of a big, it looked like a, one of those G4 jet airplanes, just a massive, massive private jet. I mean, it looks like it could seat 100 people. And the pilot to that plane, I interviewed at the small airport just outside Grand Isle, and he had accidentally penetrated this restricted airspace. And he landed, and I got him saying this, or recorded this, not on camera, but audio tape, that as soon as he hit the ground, the Homeland Security was all over him.
See, that's really unusual. I would venture to guess that BP has made a request to the government to create that no-fly zone, and the government's cooperated and has created.
Well, Rick, let me ask you this. There are no-fly zones all over the United States. For instance, over Washington, D.C., there's a no-fly zone over the White House and the Capitol. And if you penetrate that, you're in trouble. But, they send military jets up to escort you down. But it's the FAA that is going to be all over you about your license. Have you ever heard of any situation where it's the Department of Homeland Security that's enforcing a no-fly zone?
No, absolutely not.
Well, that's what this guy told me. And he also said he saw a couple of Black Hawk helicopters. I saw with my own eyes a small military presence the night I went into Grand Isle. I didn't go all the way into Grand Isle. I was about 15 miles out. And we got spooked and we left. It was getting dark.
We have the airport that I fly from is next to a military installation on one side. If you take off and make a left turn out, you'll be directly over it, and it is a no-fly zone. So we have to make right turns when we leave the airport to avoid it. Now, this military base, the notice to airmen that says it's a no-fly zone and it marks it on the map is issued by the FAA. It's not issued by the Army, Air Force. And as far as I know, the FAA is the only organization that can issue one.
Well, this is weird, isn't it?
Yeah.
Wow.
It may be requested by Homeland Security that, the FAA create a no-fly zone, and they may do it. But Homeland Security can't do it.
I went flying with a private pilot. He's an instructor yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
He called the FAA and found out that there was the area that we wanted to fly over was restricted up to 3,000 feet.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so we could fly at 3,000 feet pretty much over the area we wanted to fly over. Not ground zero or anything, but that particular area.
Yeah.
Today, when we had a pre-flight debriefing, or well, not debriefing, the pre-flight discussion, the gentleman at the who was leasing the aircraft was going over our flight path. And he had this map, and there were areas circled with purple. And those were areas that we couldn't fly over at all. No fly zones.
Okay.
So it was different yesterday than it was today. I don't know.
That comes out. Those maps are only printed two times a year. There's a first half and a second half, and they update them. If he had circled some areas on there, it's because he received what's called a notice to airmen that one had been issued that's not permanently on the map, and he colored it in. If you go back to the airport or if you talk to some of them, they should be able to give you a printed copy of that notice to airmen that says that is a no-fly zone because it is printed, comes from the FAA, and what they do is they post it on the bulletin board of the airports all around the country.
Who's got control of the FAA?
Department of Transportation is the next higher step.
It just makes me really believe, honestly, that BP and the government are just doing something behind the scenes, and they're not being totally truthful
yeah.
with us.
Yeah,
I really feel that. I mean,
yeah, it makes me feel that. Seems like they're in bed together.
Exactly. And here's another thing. I just don't understand. This is one of the biggest environmental disasters in U.S. history. Correct me if I'm wrong. And yet, why are they not? It's day 52, and they don't have all hands on deck trying to prevent this from minimizing the impact on the estuaries, marshlands, and shorelines? I just don't get it.
All right, we have to step away for break. We'll be back. Rick, thanks for the call. And folks, we'll continue after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. We're talking with James Fox. We're on Final Approach. We only have a few minutes left in tonight's show, and I want to get to this flash message. Caller, hang on for just a moment, and we'll get to you next. Ross from the United Kingdom says, since when was a corporation above the law? Something is far wrong here. Regarding the camouflage trucks, could the powers that be using this disaster as a dry run for the much-talked-about martial law New World takeover? James, I appreciate your work, as there is next to no coverage of the disaster in the UK in the lamestream media. Thank you, Ross. Good thoughts. And caller, your first name and from where are you calling? Okay, apparently the caller has given up. Okay. 623-444-5889 is the main number, and the toll-free number 888-223-4599. Caller, your first name and from where are you calling?
This is Ryan in Washington.
Okay, Ryan.
Get this. The report that I've been reading is that people that went down to the shore to offer themselves to work,
mm-hmm.
were turned away. Many of them were being turned away from what I heard from Thad Allen. So I think they're being turned away for some strange reason. But, you know, like all the fishermen and stuff that are out of work, from what I read, a lot of them are trying to get jobs down there cleaning up, and they're being told to go back home, and they have to go through a bureaucracy procedure to go through certain kind of training and stuff. But boy, if they should just let anybody. Well, I just wanted to bring that up. We're almost out of time.
Okay, thanks for the call, Ryan. Yeah, people being turned away. You would think they would want, as James said, all hands on deck. It's weird. All right, caller, your first name and from where are you calling?
Yeah, Kevin, this is Mark from Los Angeles.
Hello, Mark from Los Angeles, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah.
Mark Maverick, the owner of Indy 104.
And it was kind of funny because I just called in a few minutes ago, just after the break, and as soon as you picked up, I heard you say, you know, talking, and then all lines were cut, not only the telephone line, your feed to us, and your video feed, and I had to reset everything. So it was kind of funny how that happened right at that time, you know, about this conversation.
Wow.
Yeah. But I just wanted to comment on a couple of things. One about the person a little bit ago I was talking about, the notice to airmen. As you know, my background, when I was in, we used to put out NOTAMs as well. And this no-fly zone could also be just because they don't want people gawking over that area, you know, because all of a sudden there's 500 planes flying around over there and somebody's going to run into each other. So It not necessarily means they're hiding something. It just means they don't, you know, for safety purposes, they don't want people in that area.
Yeah, but here's the weird thing. Over Ground Zero, you have a no-fly zone below 3,000 feet. You have restricted airspace 3,000 feet and below. That doesn't do anything about air traffic above 3,000 feet. You could have 500 planes as long as they're above 3,000 feet.
3,000 feet, yeah. Well, once you get above that, then there's the VFR rule, or actually below that is VFR rules, and above that, I'm not sure of that area, but then they go IFR, which have to be controlled, and I am not sure if that area has, you know, like jet routes and, you know, Victor routes or whatever. It might be just VFR only. Well, to fly VFR, you usually have to go under 300 or 3,000 feet. But anyway.
Okay, now I have another question for you. If you can fly over Ground Zero and you can videotape that, what is there out there away from Ground Zero that causes it to be a no-fly zone, period? You can't go in it.
That's a good question. Maybe they don't want you to see how much is going out to the ocean as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, going out. Which brings up the question, I'm not sure if you talked about this in the past or if anybody else has even talked about this, but with the damage that is there right now, how much time do we have, basically, just to cut to the chase? Because we know this, the ocean's been damaged, and even if they stopped it right now, that oil's got to go somewhere. And sooner or later, that ocean is going to die. And once that ocean dies, the next one next to it dies, and it just keeps going. And then guess who's next? We are.
Mm-hmm.
Has anybody thought about how long it will take, you know, in theory, before it starts affecting us in that aspect?
I haven't heard anybody say, but I think it will be rather immediate.
Yeah, because, I mean, if all the bumblebees or the honeybees, bumblebees died off, they said, 3 years?
Mm-hmm.
Can we imagine the sea life, you know, the fish and everything else that we get from the ocean?
Yeah. And another thing is, how does this affect the ocean's ability to absorb CO2?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of things that we have to take into account here.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, fortunately, I have not been watching the news because, you know, my schedule is so busy. But
well, let me ask you a question about your schedule. Part of your schedule is you watch audience numbers. What are we looking like tonight on your station?
About 20 minutes ago, we were over 385,000.
Outstanding.
So it wasn't your peak. It's not your peak night, because I think your peak was, 776,000,
mm-hmm,
when James Horak was on the first time. But this is still a good crowd. Still a
yeah.
good crowd.
All right. Well, look, I want to thank you for the call. I'm going to have to run along because we are just about to the end of the road here for the show tonight.
All right. Well, thanks a lot.
All right. Thanks, Mark. Interesting. James, you know, I think you are, well,
hello, can you hear me okay?
Yeah, I don't know what's happening here. Hang on just a moment. Okay, we're getting some kind of beep in there.
I know, I've been hearing that the whole time.
Yeah, okay. Don't know what that is, but let's go back now. James, let me say, I think that the work that you're doing is absolutely priceless.
Well,
you're bringing information to us that allegedly mainstream media is not.
I'm shooting in high def every single day I'm here. I'm posting it within 24 hours to YouTube for everybody to see, free of charge. Only thing I'm asking, if anyone wants to support me or would like to continue to support my coverage out here, you can buy a DVD off my website of my film. It's all I've got to offer. And 100% of the proceeds of that, $19.95 plus shipping and handling, will go towards keeping me out here in the Gulf. And I'll keep reporting, I'll keep shooting, I'll keep interviewing, and I will keep posting YouTube stuff up as fast and as hard as I can.
Okay, outstanding.
My website's I know what I saw, themovie.com.
All right, and we'll link that up on the web, on my website as well. James, stay on the line with me for just a moment, if you will, because I would like to talk with you for a moment or two. I got a personal message for you that came in from someone that I need to give to you. So if you just stay on the line with me, I'll do that as soon as we...
I won't go anywhere.
As soon as we're off the air here. Well, folks, there you have it. Absolutely stunning, astounding information. And you heard it here. We need you to help us continue to bring this kind of information to you. And the only way we can do that is for some of you to join as members. It's 23 cents a day, $6.95 a month. And then you get to watch the show every night. My friends call me Steel Eye, my enemies do too. You can call me whatever you'd like to call me. Just keep coming back again and again and again. Until next time, so long, everybody.